Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The New Statesman.
Hello and welcome to the New Statesman podcast. I'm Harry Clark Azidio, policy correspondent at the New Statesman, and I'm sitting in for Anoush Kellin, who is on a very well-deserved break. This is an episode of You Ask Us, an opportunity for you, our listeners, to put your questions to the team. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Freddie Hayward, our political correspondent, and Rachel Cunliffe, our associate political editor. Welcome both. I imagine it's been quite a busy week for you both. Obviously, the big ticket item this week has been the budget. Freddie, are you all tuckered out from covering it?
I'm cracking on. You've got to do that. You know, this is the grind. It's a big week. It's exciting.
Welcome, Rachel.
I have not had enough coffee.
Have you managed to clear your inbox from all of the analysts and PRs who have been sending you their reactions to the budget?
No, absolutely not. And my favourite is that people who send their budget analysis like 24 hours later, it's like, yes, I'm definitely going to use this in my quick reaction to the budget.
Yeah, for those that don't know, I say budget day and autumn statement day are like the days in which your inbox are just like absolutely just blasted full of emails. But I suppose that's part of the churn of the industry we work in. Anyway, let's get to some listener questions. Rachel, would you like to go first? What have you got from our virtual mailbag?
So this question comes from Neil in Cambridge, who asks, Rishi Sunak and other Conservatives keep telling us that Labour will take us back to square one, either through their policies or their lack of a plan. What point in time does he want us to think of as being square one? And why does he think voters would believe that it's necessarily worse than where we are heading now? I think this is such a fascinating question, because back to square one is basically Rishi Sunak's response to any question on anything like the NHS, childcare, foreign policy, the economy. It's like back to square one. Don't risk going back to square one with Labour is like the mantra. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question, when square one is.
Yeah, I mean, it's really sort of difficult. I mean, this is the one that they're sort of trying to stick with. The Conservatives have come up with many lines over the last year to try and attack Labour. I mean, ahead of the budget this week, analysis from the Resolution Foundation found that growth has been slower over the past 14 years than any other period of party rule in modern British history. I suppose the question is, well, does square one actually seem that bad? But let's actually get to the question. Rachel, you have a good in with the Conservatives. What is the thinking behind this? Do we have any sense of what they're actually referring to when they say square one?
So I think it's a good line, or they think it's a good line. But I, given that it's a Rishi Sunak line, I think they want us to think of square one being the chaos of the Liz Truss mini budget, like that kind of week-long period where it felt like the economy was literally on the brink of collapse. Pension funds were collapsing, interest rates, mortgage rates were skyrocketing, and Rishi Sunak came in to be with Jeremy Hunt. They were the grown-ups in the room. And the idea was they might not be particularly exciting, they might not be particularly inspiring, but they will slowly help the economy recover and build back our resilience. And we don't want to go back to square one, which is kind of that moment of economic crisis. Obviously, the problem with that is that Liz Truss was a Conservative Prime Minister. Even if you sort of discount the fact that the economy has not radically improved since then, there are quite a lot of Conservative MPs in the party who quite like Liz Truss, or at least they like what Liz Truss was trying to do, and they think that actually she may have been on the right track in a way that Hunt and Sunak are not. So he can't say square one is when we had this awful prime minister who was from my party, who's still an MP, who is, you know, really quite influential among MPs. He can't say that that is the kind of rock bottom that he's building up from. But that would be my guess. I don't know. Do you think square one somewhere else?
No, I think you're broadly right, but I do think it's about the general economic malaise and the cost of living crisis that we've seen over the past few years. I think it's in part about Liz Truss, and we've got to remember that Number 10 have been umming and ahhing over how much to distance themselves from both Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. Rishi Sunak had an opportunity when he came in to say they were wrong, they've damaged the country and they've damaged the party, and I'm going to offer something different. He didn't do that at the time, in part because he was so concerned about party unity and keeping Trussites and Johnsonites on board. So he missed that opportunity. And in doing so, he was merged into the past 4 years of, or 14 years of Tory rule, and he wasn't able to set out his own stall. So I think he's belatedly trying to achieve that, trying to create that gap or separation between himself and Liz Truss, and also acknowledge in his eyes some of the economic improvements that have happened under his premiership. But it's too late.
Mm. I mean, it's just interesting, I suppose, because the line that normally comes before that attack on Labour of not wanting to go back to square one is that the government plan is working, that the plan is working, which I guess, Rachel, even the most ardent Tory would struggle to fully endorse that line, that the plan is working.
I think they are hoping that if they keep saying the plan is working, the plan will start working, or people will think that the plan is working. They mention inflation dropping a lot because that was one of Rishi Sunak's five pledges, that he would halve inflation. It was 10% at the time. It's now around 4%. So yes, that is happening. You can argue about how much the government is actually responsible for inflation one way or the other. But the other pledges, very little progress is being made on them, or in fact they are going in the opposite direction. So the focus is on this like one very specific figure, and also on whether the economy is growing by a very small amount as opposed to shrinking by a very small amount. But in terms of how people actually feel, living standards, the amount of money that they have in their pocket, how much things are costing, all of that, how much they feel like they're struggling, people are going to be worse off at the end of this parliament than they were at the start in 2019. And that's before you get into what things were like 14 years ago and the deterioration of public services and things like that. So it's difficult for the Conservatives to make that case, especially when it has been Conservative policies over that time that, rightly or wrongly, people blame for themselves feeling poorer.
Do you think this will have cut through, Freddie, with voters?
I was just thinking about that. I probably not. Little gets cut through. But I think it's quite a confused message. I mean, what they're essentially saying is that we've made some improvement, don't risk that. So I think that's a misunderstanding of where the public and voters are at. I think they recognise that things have got worse and there hasn't been an improvement. So the alternative for Rishi Sunak is to set out a vision of how things can be better in the future, to say, we recognise things aren't great now, this is how we're going to improve it, rather than saying, I've improved things, don't risk that. So I think, you know, summed up in that phrase is all the problems with the Tories' electoral strategy.
Mm. I mean, looking to the election, as you sort of hinted at, Rachel, we're looking at the general economic malaise that we've had over the last 14 years. Do you sort of see that the election will sort of be a upcoming battle of the two sort of repeated lines that both parties are going with? The Tories on one hand asking, do you want to go back to square one? And Labour sort of asking a modified version of the Reagan question of, do you feel better than you did 14 years ago?
I mean, that's probably the lines that it's going to be played out on. There was this brief period at Conservative Party conference when Rishi Sunak tried to go for the kind of hope and change message, which felt very incongruous at the time. And then he sort of the next week or so, he brought back David Cameron into his cabinet. So that didn't last very long. But we've talked a lot on this podcast about how both Labour and the Conservatives are designing a policy agenda with really limited resources. They are mostly in agreement on taxes and not wanting to raise them. They're mostly in agreement on not wanting to do anything to spook the markets or to do anything too bold or too radical. And it's really going to come down to vibes, two very similar policy platforms. one of which, though, goes, you haven't given us a go for 14 years. Maybe we could do a little bit better. And the other one that goes, please don't think about anything that we've done for the last 14 years. And that is, I think, where the difference in messaging is going to come from.
After the break, it's Freddie's turn to ask a question. Freddie, can you give us a bit of a clue as to what's coming?
We're going to be talking about why Keir Starmer isn't showing more leg.
Nice.
Can we not speculate about Keir Starmer's legs? Can we just not do that?
Fair enough.
Speculation about Keir Starmer's legs coming up. If you're subscribed to The New Statesman, you can get all of our episodes ad-free on The New Statesman app. You can get it on both iOS and Android. Just search for The New Statesman on the App Store or Google Play Store. We'll be back after this.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So, welcome back, Freddie. Time for your question. What have you got for us?
This is a question from John Smith, who says, why do you guys propose on your podcast that Starmer is currently lying, intending on being radical and inspiring once in office? Don't you think with a 30-point lead in the polls, he can afford to show his true colours now?
Okay, great question. Thanks, John. I suppose it is the overarching question of a lot of columns, YouTube videos and podcasts such as this. Who is Keir Starmer, really? And it's always really to really emphasise the mystique. You know, there's two sort of schools of thought here. Some see him as a pragmatic operator, sort of keeping his cards close to his chest, doing what he needs to do to win, while others sort of see him as this quiet radical who, once he does get into number 10, will sort of have a bolder agenda. Freddie, where do you think the truth lies?
So this debate is essentially saying, and I often think it's Tories who say this, out of fear. So many of them look at Keir Starmer, they don't trust that he's not going to be as radical as he claims, in part because of Tony Blair. They remember Tony Blair and they remember that he committed to conservative tax plans. And then he came in and they saw that he ripped up the constitution, he introduced all these social reforms, and they didn't like that. So the fear is that in some ways, Keir Starmer is going to fundamentally change the social and constitutional framework of the UK. They'll look at things like the Brown Report, that devolution, the social environmental rights, the House of Lords, and they'll be concerned. And then on the left, I think you have this hope for some, and this the cynicism from others that Keir Starmer will come in, having won the election and hopefully a big majority for him, then he'll institute these big economic reforms because he'll have greater leeway. So this gets down to the fundamental point of whether politicians are really giving us the true answers as to what they're going to do in office now. So I think the reason why Labour might be more radical in office is that they have this thing called a doctor's mandate. They can come in and say, even though we didn't promise to do certain things during the campaign, we've come in, things are so bad now, we've looked at the finances, we're going to have to be more radical. So what are they going to do? Maybe they'll raise taxes based on that doctor's mandate. Maybe they'll change their fiscal framework. So I think you'll see some change there. But fundamentally, I think we actually know what Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves are going to do. I don't think there's a huge amount of ambiguity. If you read the briefing documents, of which there are many, and we must say of which the Tories just do not have. The Tories constantly charge Labour with having no plan. At least they have some framework around which they're going to work. So I think there's a lot of radicalism within those missions, as they're called. But let's see. It has to be within those two different ways. It has to be either Blairism through the constitutional and social reforms, or through this doctor's mandate. Things are worse than we thought they were, therefore we're going to be more radical.
Rachel, how do you see it?
So what I think is really interesting about this question is the, don't you think with a 30-point lead, maybe 25 points, maybe 20 points, yeah, but a significant lead, that he can afford to show his true colours. And I completely understand that as a listener question. But if you speak to Labour MPs, anyone involved with the campaign at all, shadow ministers, they will all push back really hard on this idea that the election is already a given. And some of that is about managing expectations. Some of that is about the fact that Labour has historically been quite scarred by the polls looking more positive for them than they were on polling day, the fact that only six Labour leaders have ever won an election. The sense from Labour is that, yeah, the polls say one thing, but we've got all of this against us. We've got, you know, sort of historic norms. The media is against us. It's really difficult to run a positive campaign, because an inspirational campaign, because there's sort of so little money. We have to just not make any mistakes. And so while it may look like, well, they're obviously going to win, so why can't they say all this radical stuff, they are playing an incredibly defensive game in that they don't want to give any kind of ammunition for the Conservatives to sort of seize on and say, look at how radical they are, look, you should be afraid of them, afraid of Labour. And I think one of the things that the Conservatives are really struggling with is that Keir Starmer isn't a really scary, threatening figure. You might think he's quite boring. You might think he's quite bland. Technocratic is a word that gets thrown around a lot. He's quite similar in demeanour to Rishi Sunak in a lot of ways. But they had great fun with Jeremy Corbyn kind of whipping up this sense of, you cannot trust this man to be Prime Minister. You have to vote Conservative because look at what you will be risking if you don't. You can't really do that with Keir Starmer. Yeah. Keir Starmer is... I mean...
Yeah, the headlines are harder to write, I suppose, a bit.
Yeah, and so that is a kind of selling point for Labour, to just be as sort of defensive as possible. And they know that if anything comes across as a little bit radical, it's just going to be amplified by the Conservative messaging, because that is all that they have. So I think that's why you're seeing this very kind of quiet campaign from Labour so far, although obviously that will heat up during the actual election campaign. It feels like we're in an election campaign. We're not in an election campaign.
Not yet.
When we get into it, I think it will get a little bit more lively, shall we say.
Thanks to everyone who submitted their questions. We do read them all, so please do keep them coming in. If you'd like to send a question, just go to www.newstatesman.com/youaskus. If you're listening on Spotify, just scroll down on the episode page and leave a reply, and YouTube viewers can just drop a question in the comments. You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Harry Clark-Azidio, and my colleagues, Rachel Cunliffe and Freddie Haywood. Anoush will be back on Monday speaking to two Metro mayors, Andy Burnham, Mayor of Greater Manchester, and Steve Rotherham, Mayor of Liverpool City Region. This episode was produced by Catherine Hughes.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Trust in politics is broken, so can we get UK politics working again?
That was the last time we were happy. 2012.
I'm Beth Rigby, Sky's political editor. Join me every week with Labour's Jess Phillips and Conservative peer Ruth Davidson for some electoral dysfunction.
This idea of nuance has completely left politics. Yeah.
Together we'll focus on the policies that could deliver political satisfaction. Follow Electoral Dysfunction wherever you get your podcasts.